All right, so one of history's biggest mysteries, right? The Exodus.
Absolutely.
Did it actually happen the way the Bible describes it? And if so,
Yeah.
when did this epic escape from Egypt take place? We're going to be diving deep
Yeah.
into biblical archaeology today,
Love it.
looking at evidence from both sides
Right.
of this debate to help you form your own conclusions about it.
It's a good one.
Now, think about ancient Egypt for a second. This was a superpower, okay? Pharaohs ruling over a vast empire to
Huge.
admit that a group of slaves, the Israelites, just walked out
Right.
defying their gods and escaping their mighty army.
Right, yeah.
That's a story they wouldn't exactly want carved in stone for everyone to see.
No.
So we've got to piece together the puzzle, right? Using clues, hints from the past, and those jaw-dropping discoveries that make history come alive.
I love those.
Now, you've shared some research pointing to two main camps when it comes to dating the
Yeah.
Exodus. There's the 18th dynasty theory, you know.
Which puts it right in the middle of Egypt's golden age.
Right.
And then there's the 19th dynasty,
Yep.
a bit later, but still during a period of immense power for the Egyptians.
For sure.
Both sides have some compelling arguments, so get ready for some serious mental time travel as we go through this.
Buckle up.
Now,
It's fascinating.
go ahead.
Even without a definitive yes or no answer, the very fact that the Exodus is still debated,
Right.
so passionately, tells us something.
Yeah.
Some scholars are skeptical, suggesting it might have been smaller groups of escaping slaves,
Right.
not the massive earth-shattering event the Bible describes.
That's understandable to have those doubts, I think.
Right.
But what about the counter-argument, especially from the Jewish perspective?
Right.
This is absolutely central to their identity, their origin story.
Yeah, foundation.
They celebrated Passover for millennia,
Yes.
passing down the story, keeping that memory alive.
That kind of deep-rooted cultural memory has to come from somewhere, right?
It really does. And here's where it gets even more interesting.
Okay.
Ancient societies, they love to brag about their ancestors,
They did.
inventing tales of glorious warriors and kings to boost their own prestige,
Of course.
who would make up being descended from slaves,
Right.
unless there was some truth to it.
Yeah.
It just goes against the grain of how these societies built their identities.
You shared an article with me that explored this idea of cultural memory,
Yeah.
and it mentioned how unlikely it would be for people to just invent a story of oppression as their origin.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't make
They
sense
wouldn't track.
from a cultural standpoint.
Nope.
Plus, there are all these Egyptian elements woven into the Exodus story.
There are.
Names like Moses, clearly an Egyptian name, and places like Pithom and Ramses. These are actual cities in Egypt.
Yep.
Even the plagues themselves seem to target specific Egyptian gods. It makes you wonder if there's more to this story than just a random tale.
It's not just a random tale, especially when you consider,
Yeah.
the challenge to the power dynamic.
Yeah.
The pharaoh was considered a god king,
Right.
all powerful.
Right.
Each plague is like a direct challenge to that power. Yahweh saying, "Your gods can't stop this."
Right.
The death of the firstborn, even the pharaoh's own son,
Yeah.
that's the ultimate humiliation, striking at the very heart of Egyptian power.
It really flips the script on who holds the true power, doesn't it?
Sure.
Now, let's investigate our first suspect for the Exodus date,
Okay.
the 18th dynasty, specifically the reign of Thutmose III.
All right.
This date aligns well with the biblical timeline. And even Moses' name fits perfectly within that period, right?
It does.
Names like Amose, Thutmose. It's got
Yeah.
that 18th dynasty vibe to it.
For sure. And here's a detail that adds another layer of intrigue.
Okay.
Thutmose III, one of the most powerful pharaohs ever,
Yeah.
wasn't actually succeeded by his eldest son.
Interesting.
Could this be connected to the 10th plague, the death of the firstborn?
Yeah.
The timing is certainly intriguing.
Okay, so try to imagine Thutmose III. He was like the Napoleon of ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
His empire was massive, stretching across vast territories.
Sure.
If this guy was the pharaoh of the Exodus, it would mean that even at the height of Egyptian power,
Right.
their gods were no match for the god of the Israelites. That's
Absolute.
a pretty powerful image.
Powerful image. It really underscores the idea that the Exodus story,
Yeah.
regardless of its historical accuracy,
Right.
is about a power struggle,
Right.
a clash of ideologies and beliefs.
Absolutely.
But let's not jump to conclusions just yet.
Of course not.
We need to examine the other suspect, right. Ramses II in the 19th dynasty,
yeah.
before we can even begin to weigh the evidence.
Right. The 19th dynasty offers a different perspective.
It does.
And you explained that this is where the story of Joseph's rise to power starts to fit more neatly.
Exactly. During Ramses II's time, the Hyksos, who were foreign rulers,
right.
they controlled Egypt.
Right.
They would have been much more open to promoting someone like Joseph, an outsider, to a position of power.
Yeah.
It's a detail that just makes more sense in the context of the 19th dynasty.
And those cities built by the Israelites, Pithom and Ramses.
Yeah.
Those names are straight from the 19th dynasty, aren't they?
They are.
It seems like we're finding some solid evidence here.
Well, we do need to be careful, though.
Okay.
Those cities existed earlier, just with different names.
Oh, okay.
It's like those towns that get renamed after a famous person or event. Same place, new branding.
Yeah.
So it's not a definitive win for the 19th dynasty just yet.
So it's not as straightforward as it initially seemed?
Right.
We need to keep digging. What other evidence do we have that might point to the 19th dynasty being a more likely setting for the Exodus?
Well, there's a compelling logistical argument to consider.
Yeah.
During the 19th dynasty,
pharaohs
ruled from Memphis in the north.
Right.
Which was much closer to where the Israelites supposedly were.
Yeah.
It makes more sense for Moses to have that face-to-face with the pharaoh.
Yeah.
If they were in relatively close proximity.
For sure.
Traveling all the way down to Thebes.
Yeah.
The capital during the 18th dynasty.
Right.
Would have been a much bigger undertaking.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get your message across, it's much easier to do it in person, right?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're dealing with a powerful figure like the pharaoh.
Yeah.
But now we face one of the most frustrating aspects of the Exodus.
What's that?
The actual route they took.
Yeah.
We have a list of places mentioned in your sources, but those names have been lost to time, making it almost impossible to map their journey accurately.
It's like having a treasure map with the X ripped off.
I like that, yeah.
And to make matters worse,
yeah,
scholars haven't even agreed on the location of the Red Sea crossing.
Really?
We know they didn't take the main road.
Right.
Too many Egyptian forts.
Yeah, like a heavily guarded highway.
Right, but the precise location remains a mystery.
Wow.
One that continues to baffle archaeologists.
It's incredible to think about
this
massive movement of people defying a superpower, and yet their path remains shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
But you mentioned a captivating detail from one of your sources that really stuck with me.
Okay.
This wall mural depicting an Egyptian pharaoh returning from a campaign in Canaan,
right.
crossing back into Egypt through a heavily fortified border.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to sneak a whole population past that kind of security?
It really highlights the logistical challenges the Israelites would have faced.
Yeah.
And it makes you appreciate the sheer audacity of their escape.
I know, absolutely.
But let's move on to another location.
Okay.
That's shrouded in mystery.
All right.
Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
The legendary site where Moses received the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Some scholars believe it was actually located in modern-day Saudi Arabia.
Interesting.
Where Moses' father-in-law lived.
Uh-huh.
There's even a possible pilgrimage route mentioned in the Bible that points in that direction.
And there's that almost spy thriller story about Americans secretly entering Saudi Arabia to photograph what they believe to be Mount Sinai.
Right.
They even found evidence of a peak that looks burned, as if scorched by some ancient fire.
Oh, right.
It's a captivating theory.
It is.
To be sure. But what about the logistics of that?
That's where this theory starts to unravel a bit.
Okay.
Getting from Egypt to Arabia in 3 days. As the Bible suggests,
right.
is practically impossible.
Yeah.
Especially if they had to cross the Gulf of Aqaba. We're talking about a massive underwater canyon.
Right.
It raises some serious questions about the plausibility of Mount Sinai being located in Arabia.
It's a real head scratcher, isn't it?
It is.
But after all this uncertainty,
we
finally have a solid anchor point.
What's that?
Kadesh Barnea.
Okay.
This site is identifiable today.
Oh, cool.
Thanks to a spring that has kept its name alive
in
a mystery.
Okay.
And guess what? Archaeologists found Midianite pottery there from the right time period.
Nice.
It's like finding a piece of the puzzle that fits perfectly.
It is a significant find.
Yeah.
Especially since the Israelites supposedly camped at Kadesh Barnea for 40 years.
Right.
Finding evidence there gives us a tangible connection to the biblical narrative.
It's like finding a fingerprint at a crime scene, isn't it?
It is.
It gives us that physical connection to the past.
For sure.
But the surprises don't stop there.
Okay.
Let's talk about Heshbon.
All right.
A site ruled by Sihon the Amorite, whom the Israelites defeated in battle.
Right.
You actually worked on excavations there, didn't you?
I did. And here's the interesting part.
Okay.
Despite years of digging, we found no evidence dating back to the time of the Exodus.
Oh, wow.
It's like opening a treasure chest and finding it empty.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
Especially if the Israelites camped there for an extended period.
Mm.
Wouldn't we expect to find some trace of their presence?
You would think so, however.
Yeah.
It raises a fascinating possibility.
What's that?
The Bible describes the Amorites as relative newcomers to the area.
Okay.
What if they hadn't built a proper city yet?
Right.
And were still living in tents?
Interesting.
That would explain the lack of archaeological remains.
That's a really interesting point.
It is.
It challenges our assumptions about what constitutes an archaeological site.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it?
It does.
We tend to think of cities and structures.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the cultures that didn't leave behind those kinds of traces?
Exactly. It's a reminder that the absence of evidence isn't always evidence of absence.
Mm-hmm.
There are many factors that can contribute to the preservation or destruction of archaeological remains.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to consider those factors when interpreting the evidence.
It reminds us that archaeology is a process of piecing together a puzzle.
It is.
And sometimes those pieces are missing, forcing us to use our imagination and critical thinking skills to fill in the gaps.
For sure.
Speaking of captivating stories,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about Balaam the seer.
Okay.
The Moabite king, Balak, hired this guy to curse the Israelites.
Yep.
But instead, Balaam ends up blessing them.
He does.
It's like this divine power struggle playing out through these human characters.
Yeah. And archaeology provides us with a fascinating twist.
Okay.
An inscription from centuries later actually mentions Balaam as a revered figure.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't prove that he interacted with the Israelites directly.
Right.
But it does show that he was a real person whose story echoed through time.
So we have a biblical figure who shows up in an inscription centuries later.
Right.
It's like finding a historical footnote that brings the story to life.
For sure.
From plagues challenging the Pharaoh's authority to a potential campsite in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And even the possibility of the Israelites conquering nomadic encampments instead of fortified cities.
Right.
We've explored some really fascinating ideas.
We have.
What stands out to you from all this evidence?
That's a good question.
Are you leaning towards an early date or a late date for the Exodus?
You know, the beauty of this investigation is that there's no easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
We have clues.
Right.
Possibilities.
Yeah.
Intriguing details.
Right.
But no definitive proof.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's up to each individual to weigh the evidence and draw their own conclusions.
It's like we're detectives piecing together a case using every clue, every artifact to build a narrative of what might have happened.
Absolutely.
But even with all the evidence in the world, some mysteries may never be fully solved.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
The pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah.
The process of exploration.
Mm-hmm.
Is just as valuable as finding the definitive answer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's about the journey, the exploration, and the realization that history is a tapestry woven with both facts and interpretations.
I love that.
But we've only just scratched the surface of this epic story.
We have.
There's so much more to uncover.
Yeah.
There's so many more questions to ask.
Absolutely. It really is a testament to the enduring power of this story. And the questions it raises that centuries later, we're still trying to piece together the puzzle.
You're absolutely right. And it's not just about figuring out the when and the where of the Exodus, but also about understanding the everyday lives of these people. What did they eat?
Right.
How did they manage to survive in the wilderness for 40 years?
Yeah.
You know, those details really bring the story to life.
They do. And that's where archaeology can really shine. By looking at things like pottery shards, tools, and even food remains, we can get a glimpse into the material culture of that time and start to reconstruct what life might have been like for the Israelites on their journey.
It's like being a detective sifting through these ancient clues to solve a historical mystery. Speaking of mysteries, one of your sources mentioned a fascinating debate about manna.
Yeah.
The miraculous food that supposedly sustained the Israelites in the wilderness.
Right.
Some scholars think it might have been a type of edible lichen that grows in the Sinai desert.
That's a really interesting theory. There are actually accounts from travelers and Bedouin tribes that describe this lichen being collected and eaten, even in modern times. It's fascinating to think that what was once considered a supernatural phenomenon might have a perfectly natural explanation.
It challenges our perceptions of what constitutes a miracle, doesn't it?
It does.
It makes you wonder how many other seemingly impossible events might have rational explanations rooted in the natural world.
Right.
But food isn't the only essential element for survival. What about water?
Yeah.
The Bible talks about Moses striking a rock and water gushing forth to quench the thirst of the Israelites. How realistic is that scenario?
Well, the Sinai Desert is known for having hidden springs and underground water sources.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible that they stumbled upon one of these sources, and the story became embellished over time as it was passed down through generations.
It highlights the way stories evolve and change as they're told and retold. It's like a game of historical telephone where the original message can get distorted along the way. But surviving in the wilderness isn't just about food and water. It's also about protection and security. Did the Israelites have any kind of defensive structures or fortifications during their 40 years of wandering?
That's where things get a bit tricky. We haven't found any clear-cut evidence of Israelite encampments from that time period. It's possible they relied on natural features for protection, like caves or rock formations, or maybe they were constantly on the move, making it difficult to establish permanent settlements.
That makes sense. If you're trying to avoid detection, staying mobile would be a key survival strategy. But speaking of archaeological evidence, there's one discovery that throws a bit of a wrench into the whole Exodus timeline.
Uh-oh.
The Merneptah stele. You shared some research on this, and it seems pretty important.
It is. This inscription, which dates back to the late 13th century BC, is the earliest known Egyptian mention of Israel. And here's where it gets interesting. If the Exodus happened in the 15th or even 13th century BC, as the two main theories suggest, then Israel should have been a well-established entity by the time this inscription was made. However, the stele refers to them as a people, not a nation with a defined territory.
So does that mean the Exodus happened even later than we initially thought?
It's possible.
Or could it be that the Israelites didn't immediately form a unified nation after leaving Egypt?
That's the million-dollar question. And unfortunately, the Merneptah stele doesn't give us a definitive answer. It's a reminder that the biblical narrative and the archaeological evidence don't always align perfectly. Sometimes they even contradict each other, which forces us to re-examine our assumptions and consider alternative interpretations.
It's like trying to solve a puzzle where some of the pieces are missing.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't quite fit the way we expect them to.
Right.
We have to use our critical thinking skills to fill in the gaps and make sense of the evidence we do have. But ultimately, that's what makes the study of history so fascinating. It's a constant process of discovery and reevaluation.
Precisely. And archaeology plays a crucial role in that process.
Yeah.
It's not about proving or disproving the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's about providing context, filling in the gaps, and giving us a more nuanced understanding of the past.
It's like adding layers of detail to a story that's been passed down through generations. We might never know the complete truth, but with each new discovery, we get a little closer to understanding what might have happened. So after all this deep diving into the evidence, what's the verdict? Did the Exodus happen?
Right.
And if so, when?
I know it's tempting to look for a clear-cut answer, but the reality is it's still a mystery. We have intriguing clues, tantalizing possibilities,
yeah,
but no definitive proof. Ultimately, it's up to each individual to weigh the evidence and draw their own conclusions.
You're right. It's like we've reached the end of a captivating novel.
Yeah.
But the author has left us with a cliffhanger.
Right.
We're left to ponder the possibilities and imagine what might happen next.
And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
The mystery keeps us engaged.
Right.
It sparks our curiosity.
Absolutely.
And it encourages us to keep exploring. Who knows? Maybe one day a groundbreaking discovery will rewrite everything we thought we knew about the Exodus. But until then, the quest for answers continues.
I love that. It's a reminder that history is an ongoing conversation, a journey of discovery that never truly ends. But, you know, all this talk about the Exodus and the Israelites wandering in the wilderness raises another question. What happened to them after they finally reached the Promised Land? Did they just blend in with the people already living there?
Yeah.
Or did they leave their own unique mark on the region? It's like we followed them through this incredible journey of escape and survival. But now we're left wondering about the next chapter in their story.
That's a great way to put it. And it takes us into another fascinating realm of biblical archaeology, trying to untangle what happened once the Israelites reached the Promised Land.
Yeah.
Did they really conquer cities and establish a kingdom like the Bible says, or is that a bit of an exaggeration?
It's almost like those epic battle scenes we see in historical movies, you know,
right.
with armies clashing and cities falling.
Uh-huh.
But did those events actually play out the way they're often portrayed?
Good question.
Your research mentioned that the archaeological evidence from this period, the late Bronze Age and early Iron Age, can be pretty tricky to interpret.
It is. We have evidence of cities being destroyed, but
right.
figuring out who was responsible for those destructions, whether it was the Israelites' internal conflicts or even natural disasters, is a real challenge for archaeologists.
So it's like a giant puzzle, but with some of the pieces missing
right.
and others that don't quite fit together neatly.
Yeah.
How do archaeologists even begin to make sense of it all? What clues do they look for to try and pinpoint the Israelite presence in the region?
One of the most compelling pieces of evidence is the emergence of a distinct pottery style.
Okay.
In the highlands of Canaan, around the 12th century BC, it's known as collared rimware. And it's quite different from the pottery found in surrounding areas, suggesting a new cultural group had moved into the region.
So it's like a cultural fingerprint.
Exactly.
Something that sets them apart from the people who are already living there. Could this collared rimware be the pottery of the Israelites marking their arrival in the Promised Land?
It's certainly a strong possibility, especially when you consider the locations where this pottery has been found.
Okay.
Many of those sites like Jericho, Ai, and Hazor are specifically mentioned in the biblical account of the Israelite conquest.
That's really interesting. It's like those dots on a map that start to connect and reveal a pattern. But hold on a second. Didn't archaeologists excavate Jericho and find, well, not much of anything?
Yeah.
No evidence of destruction from the time of the supposed Israelite conquest.
That's right. The excavations at Jericho have been a source of debate among scholars.
Right.
Some argue that the evidence might have been eroded or destroyed over time, while others suggest the biblical account might be a bit embellished.
Ah, so maybe those epic battle scenes
right.
weren't quite as epic in reality.
Maybe not.
It reminds us that the Bible, while a valuable historical source, is also a collection of stories that have been passed down and interpreted through generations. We need to approach it with a critical eye, just like any other historical document.
Exactly. And that's where archaeology can help us separate fact from fiction, or at least offer a more nuanced perspective on events that might have happened centuries ago.
It's like holding a mirror up to the past, allowing us to see it in a new light with all its complexities and contradictions. So after all this deep diving into the evidence, what's the takeaway for our listeners today? What should they be thinking about as they go about their day, pondering the Exodus, the Israelites, and their arrival in the Promised Land?
I think the biggest takeaway is the importance of critical thinking. Whether you're reading the Bible, a history book, or even just scrolling through social media, it's crucial to question what you see and hear, to consider different perspectives, and to be open to the possibility that things might not be as straightforward as they seem.
That's such an important point. We live in a world where information is constantly bombarding us from all directions. We need to develop those critical thinking skills to navigate that information landscape and make informed decisions.
Absolutely. And when it comes to the Exodus, there's no easy answer. No single truth that fits neatly into a box. It's a story that continues to unfold as we uncover new evidence and re-examine old interpretations. The mystery itself is part of what makes it so compelling.
I love that the idea that the mystery is part of the allure, part of what keeps us coming back for more. And who knows, maybe one of our listeners, inspired by this deep dive, will make the next groundbreaking discovery that sheds new light on this ancient story.
I wouldn't be surprised. The quest for knowledge and understanding is a never-ending journey. And the Exodus, with all its mysteries and complexities, will continue to fascinate and challenge us for generations to come.
It's a journey we're all on together, piecing together the fragments of the past to create a more complete and nuanced picture of who we are and where we come from. Thanks for joining us on this epic exploration of the Exodus. Keep questioning, keep digging, and keep that adventurous spirit alive.